It's with great pleasure that I introduce to you the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
Thank you very kindly for your heartwarming applause. I want to talk with you this afternoon from the subject, America's Chief Moral Dilemma. There can be no gainsaying of the fact that America has brought the nation and the world to an awe-inspiring threshold of the future. We have built machines that think and instruments that peer into the unfathomable ranges of interstellar space. We have built gigantic buildings to kiss the sky and gargantuan bridges to span the seas. Through our spaceships, we have carved the highways through the stratosphere. Through our airplanes, we've dwarfed distance and placed time in chains. And through our submarines, we have penetrated oceanic depths. And this is a dazzling picture of our nation's scientific and technological progress. But when we look to the other side, something basic is missing. Our nation suffers from a kind of poverty of the spirit, which stands in glaring contrast to our scientific and technological abundance. Yes, we've learned to fly the air like birds. We've learned to swim the seas like fish. And yet we have not learned the simple art of walking the earth as brothers and sisters. Henry David Thoreau talked once about improved means to an unimproved end. And so often, we have allowed the means by which we live to outdistance the ends for which we live. It seems to me that this is expressed nowhere greater than in the continued existence of racism, poverty, and war. These are the three evils that I want to talk about this afternoon, evils that must be dealt with and problems that must be solved if we are to go on positively and creatively in the days ahead.
So I just want to welcome everyone. You're listening to a special broadcast, and I'm Catherine Davis, host of Heart of Mind Radio, heard on WBAI and the Progressive Radio Network. And we are going to be joined today by Rick Ulfick, and he's the founder of We the World. Angel Fullerton is the chief operating officer of We the World. And also we're joined by Sharon Rea, and she is someone who's going to be talking to us about no judgment, just love. And Ugozi is, she is a barrister at law and human rights attorney that is really doing a lot with We the World in that regard. So we're going to start out though with Rick Ulfick. And Rick is going to introduce and give us an overview of the program and what this broadcast is really inviting you to tune into. Rick Ulfick is the founder of We the World and the We campaign at We.net. Rick is the co-creator of the annual 11 Days of Global Unity and the 11 Campaigns for Change. We the World is participating in a convergence of events for Martin Luther King Weekend, starting January 15th and beyond for 40 Days of Peace. The program is called Manifesting the Dream, and you can learn more and register for free at we.net/MLK or send an email to MLK@we.net. Welcome, Rick, and I should say welcome back. And tell us something about We the World for people who haven't heard about it yet.
Oh, okay. And it's always great to be on your show, Catherine. Thank you for keeping this going for decades and decades.
Well, so thank you.
Mm-hmm. We really appreciate your excellent work over the years. So, so We the World is a coalition building organization. We've been around for over 20 years, and our mission is to maximize social change globally until we have a world that works for all. And what we're doing right now is we're about to launch the second year that we're doing this program, and it's about carrying forward the work and legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. As you mentioned, we call the program Manifesting the Dream. And like you said, people can learn more, sign up, and even participate with their organizations by going to we.net/MLK. So, it's about taking action and being of service. And we're going to be doing a variety of events and activities that really generate public service. There's like public salons, interactive broadcasts, all kinds of service activities. And we're working in collaboration with the Compassion Games and many other organizations that are doing this during the MLK weekend, which spans his birthday, January 15th, through Monday, the 18th, which is the national day for MLK. And then through the end of February, and the whole thing is called 40 Days of Peace. So we'll be covering a variety of themes, and we'll be hearing about people who are doing activities and events around these themes today. But some of the themes include dismantling racism, looking at the progress made since MLK was alive, and what is still needed to accomplish in terms of moving towards beloved community. We'll hear about ways to provide a safe space to discuss hot button topics of politics and racism and that kind of thing. We'll be talking about human rights and what's been happening, the history of the connection between Jews and Blacks. So that's just a few of the topics that we'll be doing during the 40 Days of Peace, and altogether known as Manifesting the Dream.
Excellent, excellent. That's a good start. We're going to go a little bit further into that. It's going to be really important, I think, for everyone to know how to connect. And now we're going to be joined by Angel Fullerton, and she is Chief Operating Officer of We the World and the We Campaign, as well as a coordinator of the Women's Campaign. In addition, she is owner of GreenWomanStore.com, a retail platform that empowers consumers and women entrepreneurs by offering fair trade, green, and woman-made products. And I would also say that, Angel, other than being the chief operating officer, I look at you as the heart. You know, you're the pulse of everything that's going on, and you really help to keep everything in order. So I'm really grateful for your time and energy. And maybe you could tell us more about the work that you're doing. I can't imagine how you're keeping track of it all, but let us know how it's going and the scope of what this program is about.
Thank you, Catherine. We the World has certainly become my family. I do whatever I can, as you said, just fill in the gaps, make sure everybody gets what they need, and so that they can be successful in their programs and projects that they're collaborating on with We the World. So I just try to be wherever I can, do whatever I can. It can be a little bit difficult to manage it all, especially now with the pandemic, and I'm always at home and I'm always at my computer. So there doesn't seem to be very much downtime, but it really takes a lot of time management and making self-care a priority to make sure that everything works the way it should.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. We all have to keep that self-care going otherwise, and our families care too, because we do have people around us that we still have to take care of. So in this particular project, I know that there's a lot of baseline detail, and I don't necessarily want you to talk about in depth in any one thing, but what are some of the kinds of things that people can engage in? Live things, video things, games, whatever it is, whatever you can tell us about the overall program.
Yes, so we certainly have a mix of virtual events that will be happening. Some of those will be live workshops, presentations, discussions, live Q&A. there will be some art performances. So yeah, there's definitely a lot happening. And we do have over on the landing page, we.net/MLK, you will find several ways that you can join in. You can watch the streams on Facebook, on YouTube. You can join us on a new platform that we are trying out on Crowdcast, where we can have live participation with other events that are happening with We the World. And hopefully we can get some of the Compassion Games Convergence events shared over there as well, so that people that are actually participating and watching those live broadcasts, we can have conversations around the things that are being talked about. In particular, I'm really excited about one event with Max Dashew, who founded the Suppressed Histories Archives. She's an anthropologist. We are going to have a discussion on history, racism, and lies, and that she takes that all the way back into like the 4th or 5th century, and how that's been developed throughout all of these years and has been a major part of our history. And then we are going to do a live discussion on an illustrated article that she has written about racialized caste and white denial. So there's going to be some really lively discussions happening throughout the entire program. So hopefully everyone can sign up and join us.
Well, that sounds exciting. And if somebody out there has an idea that they'd like to plug in a project, is it still possible to do that?
Yes.
How would they connect with you for that?
Yes. So They can either sign up on the main landing page. There's a place to sign up there. If you would actually like to collaborate and host an event or have your event shared that you may have already created, or you can just reach out to really anyone on the team, but send an email to mlk@we.net and we will get you started and get you in a spot.
That's excellent. And before we go into the project, I also wanted to introduce our intern who's joining us today, and that is Jason Ho. And he's a volunteer for We the World and is helping me produce some of these programs. And Jason not only is a volunteer, but he brought his family in. So Jason, tell us a little bit about why you did that and why you would encourage other people to get involved.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I think that We the World is a really great campaign. You're promoting a lot of really important issues that are relevant to what we're going through now more than ever. And I took the opportunity to volunteer because I want to learn more myself while also teaching people around me what we're missing out on. And I brought my mom in because I knew that the We team wanted to expand and grow as much as possible. So I thought by reaching out to a few friends and family that we could help, we could contribute to the goals that you're trying to reach here.
That's wonderful. And the other thing that really encourages me about yourself and some of the other volunteers is how young you all are. You know, people have a lot of negative things to say about young people, but I'm seeing a lot of really dedicated, talented young people gravitating towards this organization. So maybe you could speak about towards young people and why they might think about doing something like this.
Well, again, with the pandemic situation, a lot of issues became more prevalent to younger people. We realized that everybody's voice matters, including us. And even though for a while we're taught, you know, kids don't really have a say in what's going on, like we are the future. We're supposed to carry on the lessons that we learned that the past generations have taught us. So I think it's more important now than ever to make sure that younger people are becoming more educated and more involved in what's going on. And I think We the World is the perfect place for young people to not only learn, but also experience what's happening and learn how to contribute to the end result, which is finding, like, unifying everybody.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate your thoughts and your contribution. And so we're going to go and continue speaking with a few more of our guests here, at least to get a nice collaboration going. So why don't we go to Agoji and talk a little bit more about the work that you're doing as part of this MLK initiative. And Agoji Eze is a barrister at law and human rights attorney from London and a skilled producer of events and programs at the United Nations headquarters in New York. She speaks on climate change, global health, water disasters, women in entrepreneurship, and sustainable development. And she coordinates We the World campaign for human rights. So I wanted to just say thank you for joining us today, Agoji. I always love when you bring in your perspective because it seems to have that dynamic of a global perspective. And you often talk about the connections, what's happening in the U.S., what might be happening in England, what might be happening in Africa. The same problems persist everywhere, and we need to come together for some of these global solutions. So let us know a little bit about what you're doing in the coming weeks.
Well, first of all, thank you so much, Catherine, and thank you for your leadership, and thank you for inviting me back. For the MLK week, I'm actually hosting seven discussions. They range from, firstly, racial reconciliation roundtable, in which I'll bring religious leaders from different, two divergent racial backgrounds, the white and the black church. And the group basically, the function is basically, the main objective to break bread integrate, listen to each other, and basically have a frank discussion involving race. The questions could be testimonial, or indeed they could be controversial. And I'm also, as you say, I sort of see from the global perspective, I should be doing one on since apartheid in South Africa, how far have we come? Now, in this one, I'll be discussing, firstly, how far can we say that apartheid exists in the United States? We'll discuss the politics of indifference, the haves and haves nots, black, colored, brown, yellow, and white. And also we'll discuss how the COVID pandemic has shown the vast difference in systems and neighborhoods, the great disproportional, how it has affected the minority community. And we'll also discuss a negative political rhetoric that has a role to fuel the politics of indifference. And another one, which I'm quite looking forward to, which will be hosted on the 28th of February, will be Black Sisters Rising. We'll discuss how the role of Black women in the United States, more particularly in the 2020 United States presidential elections, how it has secured a Democratic Biden and Harris presidency. And another roundtable will be the Abrahamic Family Roundtable, in which I've said there's more that divides us than does indeed unite us, in which we'll talk about the family of Abraham, and that I'm quite looking forward to. And there'll be one on Jews and Blacks, how far have we come since we walked hand in hand across the bridge in Alabama. This one will be a frank and indeed a brutal open discussion on the real state of the relationship between Black and the Jewish community in the United States. And I've said at one point, I'll ask them, when do the Jews become white? We'll also explore MLK's letter from Birmingham jail, and we'll see the King's Birmingham jail letter through the Jewish perspectives. And it really is a heartfelt discussion, and we'll say, we'll ask a question. The question will be put, when did the Jews and Blacks go in separate directions once across the bridge in Alabama? And do they really like each other, and do they really tolerate each other in the United States? So basically that's one of the discussions I'll be hosting. I'll also be hosting another quite important one, which will be about hate. And hate is very prevalent here in the United States, and hate from the perspective of anti-Semitism. And we'll discuss hate is a phenomenon which is very prevalent in the 21st century, and also which is heightened by social media and the existing prevailing culture of hate. We'll discuss the First Amendment right, free speech, and of course, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, racism, xenophobia, and also related intolerance. And that's basically it in a nutshell.
Well, that's a lot. It's a really big nutshell, I have to say, that you're doing. And people can find out about these specific events by going to we.net/MLK. And remember, you could also email in order to get engaged in a more significant way to MLK@we.net. So that's wonderful. And now we're going to invite to join us Sharon Rea, and we will say that once you meet her, you know without a doubt she is a passionate woman on a serious mission to make the world a better place. As creator of Comfy Couch Conversations and founder of the global movement No Judgment, Just Love, Sharon knows that judgments are human and we judge all the time. Her message is meant to encourage people to practice no judgment, just love, which is choosing to move beyond judgment that divide to consciously lead with love in our thoughts, words, and actions. This will genuinely help us relate to each other better. And Sharon Rea works as a family relationship specialist, author, speaker, and owner of the Whole Family Coaching. She compassionately helps parents find solutions to challenges raising teens, co-parenting after divorce. For grandparents raising grandchildren, fathers taking on new roles in parenting, and every caregiver focused on raising responsible, self-confident, and happy children. So welcome, Sharon. I feel like you're everybody's auntie. So you're giving us all a chance to be nourished and to nourish each other. So tell us a little bit about your work and what your mission is and how that feeds into the work you're doing for the MLK initiative.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Catherine. I always enjoy being on your show and collaborating and have conversation with the interesting and wonderful people that I know that you invite to join. I know that each one of us, except for maybe a few that came through a test tube, we all started out with parents. The same way. And so I believe our beginnings are what inform our lives, along with who our individual personalities are. So I work with parents to help them, first of all, see the world through not their pain and their anguish, but through their possibilities. And in order to do that, it requires you to judge yourself less, because everything that you've experienced is meant, if you can see it that way, to help you understand who you are, where your place in the world is, and how you can love yourself beyond what has happened to you. And then once you do that, you're able to look out at the world, at your children, and see where they need you to help them, not where there is a spot for you to stop them from learning because you're afraid of something. So No Judgment, Just Love comes in right at the beginning with mommy and daddy at the beginning. As far as how I move through the world with No Judgment, Just Love, and invite people to see if they're willing. The first and most important thing is to believe that it is possible to judge yourself less and treat yourself better, and the similar thing for everyone else. Some people don't believe that's possible. And guess what? No judgment for them, because everybody gets to be in the space that they are with this message without having to be uncomfortable or forced to be something you're not. So during Martin Luther King weekend, I had the opportunity to facilitate and collaborate with three initiatives. The first one, unfortunately, isn't going to be able to happen because my collaborator is quite ill. And that was the depolarization. It's called a Zoomerang. So you send out positive vibes and those positive vibes come back to you. But under the heading of depolarizing us, she has created a way to have conversation with someone you may be vehemently opposed to their opinion or their belief, and start with where you can agree. Start with not the biggest part of the elephant, elephant. And then have those conversations in a safe environment, even on Zoom. And what I was going to do is directly following that, what happens when we have a conversation with anybody? There are emotions that come up during that conversation, whether they are light and loving or they're frustrating and you really don't feel comfortable after the conversation. We usually don't have a safe space to really talk about how we felt, talk about what our ideas were, recognize that we might have learned something or taught someone else something. So the comfy couch conversations are comfortable spaces, free of judgment, free of anybody interrupting or debating you. And you get to talk and hear yourself, because that's very important. Talk about your response and reaction to the depolarizing Zoomerang. Hopefully I'll get to do those comfy couch conversations in another time, since this one was canceled. The second offering, I relate to Jason so much. I'm so excited to see people that are younger than me have a passion and an interest to get involved in anything in their world outside of their small nucleus. And Jason, I honor you for helping Catherine be the broadcast for that. Thank you. So I get the opportunity to interact with a, I think he's 12 or 13 year old young boy in Florida who, like Martin Luther King, has a dream. And his dream is to interview celebrities, but possibly anyone else, as they are trying to solve the climate issue. And so he has said something that I think is very valuable. Nothing comes into the world without a dream. Somewhere, somebody had a dream about something different that already existed. And the passion that I have and that he has, and all of us here on this call, to help people realize their dreams, I think over time, and maybe sometimes immediately, will help us lift our world up. The third offering I get to do with Rick and a friend of mine who is an ASU professor of English who has written a book about Martin Luther King. So he has done extensive research about many, many, many things that we don't generally get to know about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He's also in the process now of writing a book about Malcolm X. That should be quite interesting. So what we're going to do is what I in the No Judgment, Just Love space is. We have a narrative that we adopt as a country or as a person in the family that this is all there is, or this is what we're going to repeat. And we forget, like I believe it was someone, Catherine, maybe Ugoji said, things have progressed. Things have progressed and changed since Martin Luther King identified what was wrong in his time. Absolutely, there are a lot of things that got worse and things that need to be attended to with serious people. But at the same time, there are many things that have changed. For instance, I'm a Black person and I have lived long enough to have a whole lot of different names. And each name, as it evolved, was meant to define us as a people better, to help us identify with each other more, to help other people stop degrading us by which the name they call us. So that's a progression that I think is really valuable. And now and today, you get to choose what you are being called and help people understand why that is important. So those are the kinds of conversations we're going to have. What happened in the past that has evolved to a place that, because it's evolved, we don't have to pay attention to it as much, but we should have it included in our thoughts as we change the things that need to be changed.
Well, that's lovely. And for people who might be interested, I also help to coordinate the health campaign, and we're going to be doing some things around disparities in healthcare and special needs, really the differences, the biological differences between different groups in terms of their vulnerabilities and what they might need to do in order to be self-empowered and healthy. So we're going to be putting together some broadcasts really focused in on that as part of this program. So everyone had a chance to at least briefly speak. And I know that Rick wanted to, for everybody to sort of think about where we are and the life of MLK. I know a lot of us, a lot of you have already mentioned that. But really, what do you think either is missing because we lost him, or what is he bringing? Has he brought to the table, or perhaps how has it impacted you personally and the work that you're doing? And so I just want to leave the door open for everybody to relate to that in whatever way they choose. I gave some thought to it, and what I was thinking, you know, in terms of these latest riots, I believe had MLK lived, we wouldn't be in this timeline, that these things wouldn't be happening. For a whole host of reasons, we would have moved as a country in an entirely different direction. That's my perspective. But I invite you each to give your thoughts in terms of the work you're doing and the life of MLK. Ugoji?
MLK obviously inspired me. And although I did not have the American experience as I grew up in London, it inspired me in the sense to be an attorney and to fight for social injustice, to be a voice for the voiceless, and to to adopt the Hebrew saying now, tikkun olam, to heal a fractured world, and also to, as I said, let the voice of those, the marginalized, the vulnerable, to give them their voice, as we say, Shani Alehim. He inspired me tremendously in the sense that he made me decide to fight social, racial, economic injustice. And if he was around today, I think he'll be quite disappointed. I wouldn't go as far as saying the United States would not be in the situation or the position it is right now, because to me, the United States is, you know, it's like a tale of two cities, and this relationship and this social injustice has been going on for such a long time, and people feel extremely uncomfortable to discuss the issue of race till it reaches this tipping point, because basically we are indeed at a tipping point in the United States. And if it's not handled carefully, it could have a tremendous impact, not just on the United States, but also on the world. Mm-hmm. And basically the issue, the situation that the United States is going through right now has to be handled very, very carefully. And it could determine the direction the United States will be going further into the 21st century. And also it could have a tremendous impact on, in the international arena, on multilateralism as well. That's basically what I have to say on that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Rick, did you want to chime in?
Sure. So I was kind of thinking back to how MLK has influenced my life. And actually, I realized that one of the first things that I did when I began to become like a full-time activist was I joined a group of people. And this was through someone named Diane Williams, who became one of the founding board members of We the World. And but in 1997 and 1998, a group of us created something called the Season for Nonviolence. And it somebody figured out the dates, the significant dates of MLK, Martin Luther King Jr., and Gandhi spanned January through April 4th. And it was, I think, 64 days or something like that, 64 days. And we called that the Season for Nonviolence. And we had kind of a spectacular opening event at the United Nations. Jesse Jackson was a speaker, some of us went on a trip to the Parliament of the World's Religions in 1999, which that year took place in Cape Town, South Africa. And we gave the Gandhi King Award for Nonviolence to Nelson Mandela. So we got to meet Nelson Mandela, and the Parliament of the World's Religions brought together something like 7,000 people representing all the religions and spiritual paths of the world, all in one conference. And I got to meet the Dalai Lama was attending that as well. And so all of that influence and conception of nonviolence also became very much of an important factor for me when I learned about nonviolent communication. And I became very, very steeped in that and became a facilitator for Nonviolent Communication, NVC. And I see all of that coming through my being influenced by Martin Luther King Jr. So if he were alive today, that's a good question. I think that there would be much more of an emphasis on nonviolence. And I think that kind of influence, and if he had been alive, you know, beyond the time when he actually was assassinated, I think that his conception about nonviolence and the power of nonviolence to create social change would have been even more powerful and would continue in that effort. So anyway, just that's some.
Well, that's wonderful, Sharon.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to speak on this. I was living in Washington, D.C. when both JFK, I'm sorry, outside of Washington, D.C., very close, JFK and Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy were all assassinated. Ooh. I was a young person. I was probably about 5 minutes down the road from the riots that happened in D.C. following many uprisings in our country. So I got to view Martin Luther King as a little girl. And when you're a little person, you're influenced by the reactions of the people around you. And so many people were sad and angry and hopeless, feeling hopeless. So what I got from Martin Luther King, because it was also at the time of Malcolm X and Black Panthers, and I saw the difference between nonviolence, protesting, and violent reactions to injustice. And it caused me to really evaluate, even at a young age, that I aligned with MLK so much in his peaceful disobedience. As John Lewis says, I'm doing the good work. And so from that in school, and I was in the sixth to the ninth grade, and even in high school, I became a vocal voice for Black power, a vocal voice for women's power, gathered my community just in school with strong, compassionate words, not with negative, violent actions, and had a lot of following, a lot of people that I'm still in touch with today. So I find that Martin Luther King really helped me uncover my constitution, that I'm here to be an activist like you, Rick, change things like you, Ugoji, that you see where there's injustice, but in my personal way, which is without judgment for everyone, and just love and peace for how I show up in the world.
Oh, that's lovely. That's lovely. One of the reasons that I hold the opinion that things would be very different is because towards the end of MLK's life, he had become quite radical. He was indeed still marching and speaking towards peace, but he was he had reached a point of recognizing the inequities of war and the United States going out into the world and really exploiting people globally. And I think that also, so he had a level of, he had a sort of a political awakening himself. And I believe that's part of why he was assassinated, because he had fused this political awareness and strength with the peaceful mobilization. And one of the reasons I feel that the world would be different is that he would have provided a different kind of leadership for Black people in this country. And I feel in many ways we've been captured by the Democratic Party, terrorized by the Republican Party. And then we're like this volleyball going back and forth. And I think that there's a real need for that kind of solid leadership. And this community has been deprived of that again and again. And it's the not having that which has really helped to suppress true opening, awakening, and empowerment of the Black community in this country, in my opinion. I mean, if Kennedy MLK, even Malcolm X, Bobby Kennedy, if these people had lived, we would be living in a different country entirely, in my opinion. We really would. Because when you look at the racism, even that we're experiencing now, it's seeded, it's nourished, it's allowed to flourish and encouraged. And I think that's the real problem. And we have a community, like even in this election, to me, a lot of people voted out of fear, you know, anything but Trump. And so in doing that, no demands were made of the Biden team. And so we're still left floundering. So I think we need strong leadership. So that's where I'm coming from anyway. So Jason, you were born well after the life of MLK. Did you have a chance to actually hear much about his life and his contribution?
Well, in school, you know, we go through the normal history lessons. We learn the basics of what his contributions were. But hearing what you guys have already mentioned, like, there's things that I didn't even know he did. And I think that's really on the education system for not informing the youth on all his contributions, what he actually did to change the narrative. And, you know, this is why I'm here. I want to learn what he did, what he stood for, and how his legacy still stands today. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is really informative to me right now.
Excellent, excellent. And so, Rick, maybe you can go a little bit more into the work of the 11 campaigns and We the World, so that if people want to engage, because we're working and featuring this current program, which is really a very powerful one, and that's the 40 Days of Peace, starting with the Martin Luther King weekend. But when I heard you talking about, what was that, that thing you were talking about when you first started, I couldn't.
The season for nonviolence.
I seems to me like that's something we should revisit. I was wondering if there's footage or audio. I think that should be a documentary.
And people are continuing it. I mean, we helped to launch it, but there was a group of maybe 20, 25 organizations that launched it. The main organization is called the Association for Global New Thought, AGNT. And they, I think, have been continuing to carry the torch, basically, and have, you know, some celebrations every year regarding the season for nonviolence.
I think we need that right now in this country.
I think you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. There's one thing I wanted to point out, just for the folks who are watching or listening to this. If you are inspired by any of these activities or discussions that we're having now, we want to encourage you to do that yourself in your own community, in your own family, or wherever you want. You can get folks together and have these same kinds of discussions, or even create events. And that's the kind of thing that we want to help promote. If that's something that you or your organization is interested in, please send us an email. We mentioned this earlier, mlk@we.net. And then we can even put an event that you are thinking of putting together. We can put that on our calendar, promote it. But in any case, even if it's a private event, we want to know that you were inspired in some way by our discussions. So, and our kind of carrying it forward, because that's really the one of the big concepts here that's different in many ways, because we want to see kind of a ripple effect as we're doing something. We want to see it ripple out into communities, not only around the United States, but around the world. So Catherine, you mentioned asking about what We the World does in general. And, you know, the one of the things that we did, I guess, our largest program is called 11 Days of Global Unity. And it's something that takes place every September, from September 11th through September 21st, which is the UN International Day of Peace. And so we call that 11 Days of Global Unity. And there's a whole history to it. But basically every year it becomes a convergence of events, and it becomes a platform for change makers around the world to show what they are doing and get people involved in activities for peace, justice, sustainability, and transformation. And what happened was we launched it in 2004, and we've been doing it every year since. But out of that has grown 11 campaigns for change. And those campaigns go all year round. And they are campaigns like unity, interdependence, and environment, and human rights, economic justice, peace, disarmament, 11 full-blown campaigns with many organizations working on these things. And you can connect with us and become a part of any of these campaigns as an individual or as an organization. And here's a link where you can go to sign up to work with us, to collaborate with us on that. We.net/partner. It's pretty simple. And I guess it's this kind of work that we're doing that's kind of comprehensive to creating a world that works for all. And another way to put that is a we-based society. So like we're moving from an I-based society to a we-based society, where people from an individual level to the highest levels of government, they prioritize we and the common good. And there are many ways to express that with the Martin Luther King program. He expressed it by working to achieve the beloved community. That's another way of saying a we-based society. And I guess that's how we're focused now, because we're thinking about MLK. But I encourage you to collaborate with us, and we can then accelerate that move towards a we-based society and a world that works for all.
So we are approaching the last moments of this particular broadcast, and I want to give everyone a chance to offer a few thoughts as we embark on this tribute, really, and a way of bringing us all together under the really the guidance of Martin Luther King Jr., because his vision is alive today in people such as ourselves. So why don't we do another round? Egoji, do you have any thoughts you want to leave us with? And everyone else mute while someone...
As a woman from the African continent of African heritage, I'd like to invoke the principle of Ubuntu, which speaks about the interconnectedness of human beings, that we coexist and we cannot live in a society or in an environment unless we coexist. And this principle is very much needed now in the United States with the ongoing civil unrest. So basically, that would just be my final word, the principle of Ubuntu.
Sharon?
I concur with Egoji. I love that principle and I've adopted it. For me, I encourage people to do what I believe Martin Luther King did in the moments when he wasn't speaking, he wasn't protesting, and he wasn't being out in the public, was time with himself to understand his thoughts, to really craft what he felt was his solution to the ills of the world that he was experiencing and living. And I think too much today, we do not take that lead from him to pause and figure out where we really stand. What resonated with me from this conversation is Ugoji saying, there's much more that divides us than unites us. And at the moment, that is a truth. And until we can accept what the truths are by spending time alone, understanding where we are, where we've maybe been led astray by others, therein we do live out Martin Luther King's hope of having us all come together with more that unites us than divides us.
Excellent. And I would say that, like you, Sharon, I was very young when these things were going on. And in fact, it's what exploded my awareness of the world. As far as I knew, the world was two blocks long. And then when this happened, I realized there were different people, and then there were all these issues, and there was violence. Up until that point, I had no exposure to those things. So it kind of blew my awareness open to what some of the issues are. And I think that that's something that we can still offer people, is this opportunity through information that we're providing here, that they can sort of blow away some of the cobwebs and just become aware of what other people's lives are like, what other people's sufferings are, and hopefully be motivated to do something about that, even if it's just to bring the awareness and the information out there. Primarily, I'm a broadcaster, and I think information is really a most valuable thing. So this is really important. And it's also important because as I look at the media landscape, it seems to be shrinking. You know, there's not the diversity of ideas. There's not an opportunity for everyone to say what they believe, because the media itself is beginning to crack down on diverse voices and diverse perspectives. So I'm hoping that we can expand to provide a space for that voice that never seems to be heard. And that's the voice of compassion, peace, love, and building, you know, making the world better. There isn't much that we can find on those issues out in the mainstream. So I'm hoping that we can find ways to really expand that and give people an opportunity to follow that vision. Because as I look at ourselves on the screen, I see that there's this wide diversity of personalities, of backgrounds, even age. But I remember when I was that child and that kid going on a protest to protest the Vietnam War, marching on Washington for equal rights. And I think that we have to understand that, you know, we need to engage young people, open up their minds, because that's who we were once. And also to offer hope, because here we are 50, 60 years later, still doing the same thing, never having given up. And I think that's really important to realize that we have this huge community of people that have been dedicated for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years and are still engaged in making the world better. So we're just expanding our crew and trying to get more done. So I'm very hopeful, and I think we can do a lot going forward. So to me, that's what it is. MLK was a preacher and he inspired, and I feel inspired by his life, and each of us has the power to go on and inspire someone else. And that's how we carry the legacy forward. Jason, what are your thoughts?
Just echoing what everybody's mentioned previously, we need an open mind right now. You need to be willing to learn, because I think with some of the issues that are going on, people are too closed-minded, too stuck in old ways. And really, the only way to make change is by understanding what's actually happening. You need to know what you think, while also considering what other people think. And that way you can really come up with your sort of path of where you want to take your next steps. Because, look, change isn't going to be done by one person. It needs to be done by everybody as a collective. So becoming more informed, being willing to learn, and just having an open mind throughout is what's going to bring up, hopefully, bring about change, the change that we need right now.
Excellent. And Rick, I'm going to give you the last word as we're running out of time.
Well, thank you. Well, this has been a pleasure hearing this discussion, being part of it. But I just wanted to draw attention to what you started touching on, Catherine, which is the role of the media. And I think that it's important to point out that the way media has evolved, the dominant media, which is profit-driven, it has evolved to the point where it has become profitable to have the most sensational and controversial things, get the widest audience because the algorithms were written that way. And I think that's important to point out. So I do actually feel that we have much more in common than we have that divides us. And the way that a lot of the media is structured now is it actually helps, it makes it easier for divisive and hate-filled rhetoric and that kind of thing to have a wider audience. And also disinformation is another huge factor in the media. So that's all to say that I hope that people continue to support independent media in the public interest, like this program, like what Catherine has been doing for decades, because it's important for those voices to get out there, like we've been saying, the voices of compassion, love, tolerance, respect, and justice.
Absolutely. And I just want to let people know that this program is going to be aired on Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. It airs on Saturdays at 6 p.m. And also, we have a program called Heart of Mind on WBAI Pacifica Radio in New York. And that airs live on Fridays at 11 a.m. So if you tune in to these programs, you'll be hearing much more of what we're doing with the We campaign at we.net. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. And bye for now.